powered from the Sereno Cigar Company studio in North Carolina. Welcome to Primetime Special Edition number 3. Tonight, we have Gabriel Alvarez of Casa Cuevas Cigars as our special guest. We're also going to have a special segment surrounding cigar hype and a lot more on this edition of Special Edition. Special Edition number 3 is sponsored by Drew Estate. Check out and download the Drew Diplomat app for your mobile device. Keep up with everything going on Drew Estate. Experience the subculture that is the rebirth of cigars. Available on iTunes or Google Play. For more information, check out www.drewdiplomat.com. And we are on the air. Welcome to Special Edition number 3. Will Cooper from the Sereno Cigar Company Studios in North Carolina. Joined tonight across the country from Texas, my co-host, Bear DePussy. Bear, welcome.
How you doing, Coop?
Hey, so we had a little bit. It seemed like everyone had a tech. Last week was my technical issues. And this week, I think it was yours and our guest, Gabriel, who will introduce momentarily. So it always happens. So appreciate the audience hanging in there a little bit. It's always one thing or another.
For sure. Absolutely. Yeah, it's all right, though.
No. So, how was your week going this week so far?
It's going pretty good. Regular 9-to-5 and everything like that, but getting ready to do some of my shifts at Michael's Tobacco, and they're actually having a little cut and light with one of your guests a couple weeks ago, Fred Rui and Nomad Cigars. He's over there right now, so they're having some good times without me, but I'm having some good times right here and getting ready to get started and get to chatting with Gabe here about Casa Cuevas.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, for folks who are, been following the Primetime Show, Primetime Special Edition, it's our spinoff, so to speak, but it really is industry content, industry people, just like we do on the Primetime Show. And we were able to mix it up here and change the format around from time to time. And it really allows us to bring in guests. And I'll tell you, Bear, we've been real blessed in terms of people. We've been reaching out to people to come on the show. We've actually been overbooking, which has been a good problem to have.
Yes, so, absolutely.
Yeah, and you know the IPCB, our trade show is coming up, and we want to for folks who, whether the folks are going to the trade show or not, we definitely want to give them as much exposure as possible. There's a lot of good announcements coming, so this is why we have special edition. And so I think it's been great. So tonight, actually, the first person to be a guest on Special Edition is my friend. I've known this guy for several years now. One of the great guys in the cigar industry, Gabriel Alvarez. Gabriel, Will and Bear here. How you doing?
Doing well. Thank you for having me on.
We're really, really pleased to have it. I've been following you for, I think we know each other. I remember we met in Chattanooga. Chattanooga.
At the tweet up.
Yeah. And it seemed, I think that was 2013. So it's about 4 years right now.
Yep.
Gabriel, so we're going to get into Casa Cuevas Cigars, but what is your role? What are you actually doing now for Casa Cuevas Cigars?
For Casa Cuevas, I am the director of sales / everything else. we're a two-man show at the moment, a small company. Basically, it's a startup thanks to the FDA. We launched the cigars prior to the deadline last year. Or Lewis launched the cigars part of the deadline. I came on board after I resigned from my previous company. And it's been a fun ride from the beginning.
So, Gabriel, yeah, I mean, you're a very experienced guy in what you're going to be doing. In terms of how you got that, you actually started out on the retail segment. Is that correct?
Correct. I had my own store here in Miami. A lot of people knew it as the neighborhood humidor.
I've been there.
It's under new ownership now. It's called Master Cigars. And funny thing is that we did the Casa Cuevas launch party at Master Cigars. So it kind of came full circle for me.
I didn't realize that was the same place.
Yeah. Yeah, it's owned by Felipe Sosa. He was the master blender for Toraño Cigars for a long time. And he launched the Master Series through Toraño. And he helped blend also La Rosa de San Diego. And now he's got his own shop here in Miami.
Have you smoked La Rosa de San Diego?
Yeah, man. I actually have. Good cigar.
They are really good cigars. Bear, I don't know if you've smoked La Rosa de San Diego at all.
No, I haven't. I haven't had the pleasure yet. I've heard. I've actually heard a lot about it. So when he said that, my ears kind of perked up a little bit. I definitely like to get my hands on one of those. I'm not sure if they make their way this far out west or not, but if they do, I should try to get my hands on one for sure.
Yeah, I know they're pretty prevalent in the Miami area, and I'll be heading to Miami in November. So I know there's a place. I know. Well, obviously, I know a place now. I know a couple places where I could definitely get my hands on them. And they were coming out of American Caribbean, those cigars, I believe. That was their brand.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Gabriel, so from the retail end, you went over to – first you went to Coots, correct?
Correct. I was the operations manager at Coots, helped launch them. Learned a lot. And from there, I went to Maya Selva. Learned a lot more there.
Yep.
And then now I'm here at Casa Cuevas. Still learning.
I think in this business, we're always learning here. And, you know, tell us a little. So you went, you know, obviously when you left Maya Selva, I believe it was last October?
Last September.
Last September, okay. So, you know, obviously, you know, I was glad that you stayed in the business, but what kind of attracted you to go to Casa Cuevas?
To be honest, the family history with the Casa Cuevas family, it's incredible. Their roots go back to Cuba. There are four generations in the tobacco industry. They used to grow, and they were purveyors of tobacco in Cuba. They didn't have brands or anything like that. They used to grow their tobacco and sell it. And in the 50s, everybody knows what happened. And they took off into the Santo Domingo. And the Cuevas family stayed in Santo Domingo growing cigars or making cigars. And it's a really rich history in the cigar industry from all aspects of it. Nowadays, they don't grow their own tobacco. They purchase their tobacco just about from everybody and from all over. And I've had the ability to go to the honor to go to the factory a couple of times now. We've been there probably about four times since I started with them. And every time I go there, I fall more and more in love with it. And just the aspect that they have just about any type of tobacco available to them. And if it's not, they go out and look for it. Wherever it is, if they want to try it for something, they have it there. It's incredible. It's incredible. And Casa Cuevas came up because of the FDA. They've been dabbling. The family's been dabbling to launch their own line for a while. And it was never the right time or the right fit. And Lewis, the owner, says he also never had somebody like me to launch the brand. Because he... at the Tabacalera Las Lavas, which is the factory in the DR, they've been a private label company for a very long time. And they make cigars, or they've made cigars for a ton of people. Sam Lucia, Tarano,
Gurkha, CI. Right? They did some for Gurkha too.
Gurkha. We make all the cellar reserves for Gurkha at the factory, except for the Platinum that's made in American Caribbean and Nicaragua. And a couple of other lines for Gurkha are made at the factory as well. And basically, they didn't have the need to come out with their own line. They were doing very, very well with the private label. But since the FDA came in and they said, if anybody comes out with a line after August 8th, they have to go through the whole approval process that nobody knows what it's like still, they decided to make that launch.
You know, that's... it's a really fantastic story, and the Cuevas family does have a very incredible and deep and long history, as you definitely alluded to there, Gabe. You know, I'm interested to see what your thoughts are on, if there are any differences at all, or if you've just kind of approached it the same way in terms of the difference between switching from a Honduran based facility to a Dominican one. What are your thoughts on that?
Factories are factories. They make cigars. Cigars, I mean, premium cigars, it's tobacco over tobacco, bunched up or rolled up or entubado. They're all made in the same fashion. They're handmade products. whether it's made in the DR, whether it's made in Honduras, whether it's made in Nicaragua. It's the same exact process. I mean, do people have their own tricks in the trade? Of course. They all do, and some people use Lieberman, some people don't use Lieberman machines, and some people just go strictly 100% hand-bunched or hand-rolled 100%, but it's a handmade product. We all smoke them, and the differences aren't there. I've been to factories in Nicaragua. I've been to factories in Honduras. I've been to factories in the DR now, and it's the same exact process.
Fantastic. You notated the different types of tobacco that you guys are working with. Now, the three core blends that you've already released have a lot of the same principles involved. There's the Ecuadorian Habano, and the Nicaraguan in the binder is kind of a uniform kind of platform, if you will, that's on all three cigars. But you've got Dominican, you've got Honduran and stuff. But I noticed doing a little bit of research that you guys are dabbling with, or at least you've dealt with, and with all the cigars that they've made for everybody else over time, they've dealt with Peruvian, they've dealt with Colombian, like in the Maduro that you guys make. Right. They've dealt with. I'm really excited about Indonesian and Peruvian tobacco. I'm a big, you know, seldom used leaf nerd. I love Indonesian tobacco. I mean, when we met, when you came up to Michael's Tobacco that one time, and you handed me my first Muro that I had when you were with Coots, and I was like, you're like, oh, this is Sumatra. And I was like, oh, that's the one I want to start with. There we go. And I mean, immediately in love with that. But I mean, are you excited about anything on the horizon as far as working with some of those seldom used leaves or the seldom used tobaccos as opposed to what you got rolling? I know you want to get these growing and you want to build a foundation, but I wanted to see if you were excited about any of those specific tobaccos.
We are, honestly, and we were just at the factory about a week ago, and we're working on reviving an old family blend that the family had for a while, and it fits the predicate profile, and we're in the process of getting all that taken care of. And one thing that I fell in love with there at the factory, and like I said before, we have access to a lot of different types of tobacco, and in the DR, there's a lot of suppliers, being that the big boys are all there. And the Colombian, like you said, was a tobacco that I had never tried before. And it's something that we're using in our Maduro line of Casa Cuevas. And it was just something that added to that blend incredibly. You can't really use an overabundance of it, but just a note of it in there made a difference on the blend, and that's why we threw it into the Maduro. And it's funny because you try all these cigars or all this tobacco individually and you're like, holy, you know, it's a powerhouse or this, and it's going to do this to the blend. And then when you start putting them together, it does something different than what you thought in your head would do to that blend. And you like it or you hate it, or you're like, you know, we could use it, or I'm not happy, or it's not what I was looking for. So it gets to be a lot of fun there, when you're playing with all these different tobaccos. And last week we were playing with certain tobaccos, and like I said, we tried it individually, and one of them just threw me to the floor. We got some Connecticut broadleaf in the factory, and we were using it for something else, and I had never tried Connecticut broadleaf on its own. And when I smoked that just with an Habano binder on it, it just put me on my ass, basically. I had to take a break, almost like 20, 30 minutes, go get some orange juice or Coca-Cola and just take a break and
cleanse Lewis, the palate, huh?
Yeah. And Lewis kept giving me cigar smoke. I'm like, oh yeah, give me a minute. You know, I need to. He's like, really? I'm like, yeah, really. I took like a really big hit of that Connecticut because the flavors were so intense that I really wanted to get into it. I retrohaled and everything, and even the guy that's sitting behind the table, he was like, holy shit, you know. He took a big hit on that. And we're not FCC regulated, I can say.
No, we're not FCC regulated.
All right, perfect.
Yeah.
And it was
first thing I asked, by the way, when I started doing this.
Dude, so. We had a Ron Jeremy conversation on the last show.
Whoa.
Yeah, so I can tell you where that went.
Yeah, no, it's okay. We're not going there today.
No.
but yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, especially experiencing all these new tobaccos. I've been more on the sales side of things and not really into the blending. I've been able to give my opinion, and I've been able to visit the factories and my other two companies that I was with and put some insight into it. But in Coots, I was a rookie in this, and I was still dabbling and getting to know different tobaccos, and I knew what I liked, and I was getting to know what I didn't like. And Maya Selva, very set in their ways, very classic company, and they already had all their blends established. So every now and then I would get something from the factories that they were trying out for something else, or the blender there, he was like, hey, try this. I just made this. And I was like, I got to try Panamanian tobacco, and I fell in love with that. And here it's with Casa Cuevas, it's just that ability to be able to get new things and play with certain things. And it's unfortunate the way the industry is going with the FDA, that we can't come out with more things. It truly is. I'm saddened by it, because we can get creative. I mean, there's so much to do still with all the tobacco that's out there.
Gabriel, I totally agree. You know, I've had a chance now to smoke through the whole line. I'm actually smoking the 60 of the Habano.
I see that.
These are not cookie cutter blends you guys have put out. You know, I can see a lot of times, and I'm not trying to knock any companies, they'll put out a Connecticut, a Habano, and a Maduro. And I can pretty much go in and guess what a lot of it's going to taste like. These really surprised me. I mean, they're like these cigars have just brought a real refreshing kind of change of pace. Because you mentioned the Colombian tobacco and that Maduro, which, you know, I only know one other Maduro that I've had that has that's used Colombian that I could think of. And this Habano is just, I mean, this Habano is I've been chain smoking these Habanos. So they are just great. That Connecticut as well. I mean, so I think that you're definitely bringing a product to the market that is, it's refreshing. I mean, for the consumers, and that's a shame that could all go away with the way that the industry and the regulations heading.
And it's like Luis Cuevas says, if we're going to come out with a line to compete in this market, we have to offer something different. And when I came on board, within my first two or three weeks that I was with the company, we flew to the factory, and he goes, sit here. We're going to smoke through all the blends. I want you to try them. I want you to be happy with them, because at the end of the day, you have to sell these. And if you're not happy with something you're selling, it's now a job. And I couldn't agree more with him. And his dad told me the same thing. He goes, you have to like what you're selling. And I took it truly to heart. And the opportunity they gave me of having input and being able to go back and forth with them and saying, okay, how about this? Or can we tone it down a little bit on this? Or can we ramp it up with this? And they were for it. They green light, full speed ahead, just walk out to the floor, tell the blender, hey, adjust this, adjust this, adjust this. And I'll tell you what, when I came on board, we had some really good cigars. And after I was able to sit with Lewis and discovering that Lewis and I had really similar palettes, we were able to go just back and forth on paper, not even trying the tobaccos, and saying, okay, yeah, you have a point here. Let's tone it down here. Let's add a little bit more of this. And not really changing the blends in any way, but we were tweaking to come out with something that's going to be different on the shelves. It took us, honestly, about a month to come up with the pricing where it could be reachable for anybody to try the cigar and not be offended by the price of the cigars. We're not making millions of dollars with this brand. It's a brand where the price points are high sixes to mid eights, three sizes, three different blends, and we tried to keep it as simple as possible, but the blends were as creative as possible as well, and as non-offensive as possible. It was really our goal. We wanted anybody to be able to pick up any of our cigars and say, okay, yeah, this is a good smoke. I can come back to this and try it again and try it again. And with the more time these cigars sit on the shelves or they age at the factory, they're just getting better and better and better.
You know, Coop and I were actually talking about it as before the show started up, because I smoked through most of the line too. I was going to smoke the Maduro on air tonight. I'm actually finishing off one of the Connecticuts right now. Okay. But we were talking about the Habano specifically. I did some research, obviously, you know, obviously on the brand, the family and things like that, but I didn't want to look at the blend because I wanted to actually kind of just smoke it blind with no, you know, prerequisite, you know, kind of assumptions or anything like that. And Coop and I were almost kind of in agreement here. And Coop, if I misunderstood you, you can disagree with me here. But when I smoked for about the first third of that Habano, I was like, this got to be her Corojo leaf. I mean, that pepper is just so prominent, so beautiful, especially on the retro. And I was like, this has to be a Corojo leaf. And then when I looked at it and saw that I was totally wrong, I was like, wow. And just, again, it kind of goes back to what you were saying about blending. But my question, I guess, to you is, and what out of the three lines, I mean, which one do you like the most? There you go. Okay.
Maduro.
Fantastic. I'm looking forward to it.
I keep going to the cigar day after day, and just I find more nuances to it and fall in love with it more and more each day as I smoke them. To the point that we were at the factory, like I said, last week, and we rolled, we had some Lanceros and some Petit Lanceros rolled for us.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
And it's, oh, my God, those cigars are good. I put a post last week or on the weekend saying it's a shame that we can't release these things because it's a great cigar to launch as like a store exclusive or something like that, you know, or something that's available only through a certain group, because the cigar is so damn good and it stays true to the blend. It's delicious, man.
The one thing also I noticed about these three cigars is I think you mentioned already, they seem like they're meant for every consumer.
Yeah.
So really, you don't have to, you know, for Connecticut, you know, you don't have to be someone who just likes a mild cigar to enjoy that. And with the Maduro, you don't have to be someone who likes a full cigar to enjoy that. Right. They kind of seem to be in that medium to medium plus of the Habano and the Maduro. Connecticut a little more dialed back, I thought. But I kind of felt you guys hit a sweet spot with that.
Yeah, that Connecticut, if you notice, I mean, the blend for the Habano and the Maduro are almost the same. The only difference is that Colombian in there, and there's Colombian in the Habano as well, but just not enough to mention it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And it was just easier for us to keep the blends in that sense. But the Connecticut, when we were playing with the blends, we ramped up that Connecticut, and I smoked it, and I was like, holy moly, this is just past Connecticut, what everybody goes to a Connecticut for, which is a nice mild cigar, mild to medium at best, and people just want that classic mild smoke that they can smoke at any time. They're on the golf course, they're in the morning with their coffee. They want to smoke a cigar at night after dinner, and they're just looking for something with good flavor behind it. And that's what we did with the Connecticut. Just a couple of tweaks to the original blend and ratios of the tobaccos that are being used in there. And I'll tell you what, I start most of my days with that Connecticut and my coffee.
Yep. Yeah, but at the same time, I think what I was trying to say is, and you kind of just validated it, is, you know, hey, that Connecticut, it's if you're someone who enjoys something a little more fuller, you could get a lot out of that Connecticut.
It's got body. Flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got body to it.
It's got body.
I'm enjoying the hell out of it right now, so it's fantastic.
Yep.
Yeah, it's got some body to it. I mean, I've smoked it after a steak dinner, and I still get a lot from that cigar. And it's just because I didn't want something more into that fuller category. I still wanted to smoke a cigar. I just wanted to relax, and that Connecticut did it, you know. And it's like I said, it's we're not recreating or reinventing the wheel here. But we are trying to put something out into the market that's different, you know, and honestly, you've smoked the whole line, Coop.
Yep.
That Habano, that Maduro, tell me what else on the market tastes like that.
No. And I'll even put the Connecticut in there as well. I mean, it's got its, but yeah, that Habano, both those cigars were very, very, like I said, I had a preconceived notion because I've seen a lot of these trifectas come out. And I had, you know, and I'm not saying that, you know, these other cigars on the market are bad. It's just, it's kind of like watching Groundhog Day. But here I smoke these things and I'm like, these things all brought something different to the table. And I think it's something very exciting that you're going to have as you now go to market with these things. This is exciting here.
Yeah. I mean, we've been launched already for 2 months. And that's another story. We were supposed to launch last November. We had some issues with some trademark things and stuff like that. And we had to change the fonts in our bands and our boxes and everything. So that delayed us in launching the line. And it pushed us from November of last year, December, that we were going to launch the line, into April of this year. And it happened. I mean, and I think, honestly, it was a blessing in disguise, because the bands, they pop, the boxes pop, the new font that we're using on everything, it's very legible. You see the cigar, you'll recognize it if you've smoked it before. If you're looking for it from our advertising, you'll find it right away in the humidors. It's very nice, and it's a very classic look on the bands. Everybody compliments the bands and the boxes.
Yes. Yeah, I like the fact that that the name is Cuevas is prominent. You know the word Casa is, you know, gets thrown around in this industry quite a bit. It's on names, it's on brands, it's everywhere. It's something that you've seen and everything like that. And you know obviously that's an important part to the company name and everything. But the soul behind Casa Cuevas is obviously the four generations, right, tobacconists. And it's funny you brought this line of dialogue up, because I was actually going to comment on that I really like that you're putting the name out there, and we talked about this in the first edition of Special Edition. You know, it took Frank Yaniza 90 years to finally put his name on a cigar. And so when you've got a great family tradition of blending, or a great tradition of tobacco men and women, and you put the name on it, you know it's something right. phenomenal, and you know it's something special.
No, for sure, and we're very proud of it. We're proud of the three blends. They're doing extremely well. I mean, 2 months we've been on the market, and we're in 28 accounts now. We opened up another account today. It's growing very nicely, very controllable, and we're advertising. We're doing our thing. We're doing our thing little by little.
Are you guys going in-house, or do you guys have brokers?
Well, in-house, it's me, and I have a broker network that I'm putting together little by little. We're up to 4 brokers right now. Talking to a 5th one in Texas. And these guys are out there, and girl. So we have a lady on board as one of our brokers. We have Westgate out west.
Yep.
Frank Bellavia is controlling California, Arizona, Oregon, Washington. That territory over there, he might be picking up New Mexico soon, because of everything that's going on in California.
Yep.
And here in Florida, Fort Lauderdale up, we have Matt, they call him Goose. He came from a retailer a couple of years ago, and he's developed his own broker business, and he's doing some good things here in Florida. We signed him up a couple of weeks back. And in Mideast, Maryland, D.C., Virginia, we have Lisa Sigler. And what I'm looking for with the brokers is energetic, young. They're out there hustling. They don't have a huge portfolio, but they have a decent portfolio. At least one big brand that gets them into the stores on a regular basis. And these people that I've signed up so far and are working with us now, they fit those categories. They fit, you know, what I was looking for.
And I mean, you mentioned the 28 stores. It seems like you're targeting very key markets right now. You know, obviously,
well, it's where we have our reps. I mean, I live in South Florida. I know most of the shops down here. Mm-hmm. They've received us with open doors, thankfully. And I'm very, very appreciative of it. And in the markets where the reps have signed up, and they're doing their thing. We have a store in Iowa that I opened up on my own. And this gentleman, I don't know if you guys have heard of Club Herf.
I have.
Mm-hmm. I have too.
You know, he's somebody that's been trying to open up a store for years now. And Chris has done a hell of a job to open up a beautiful, beautiful store. He's in Iowa. He's got golf simulators in there, humidors, cabinets, a huge lounge. It's a beautiful shop. And I met him at the same tweet up where we met Coop. Originally, and back from back then, he was, you know, trying to find the right location. He had one on contract that fell through, and he finally got things up and running. And we never lost touch. And he just called me. He goes, "Hey, you're with Cuevas. I want Cuevas in my store." And it's been working like that, just on relationships that we built through, that I built throughout the years, that Lewis has built throughout the years. And it's been working great. And these are people with the 28 accounts that we have. I want to say more than 50% of them are already on reorders. Some of them are already on their third or fourth order. And it's been going great. It's been a very controllable growth for us. And we're very proud of everything the way it's going right now.
And it's exciting. I always say, Gabriel, it's that reorder that's really going to determine if you've penetrated that account.
Exactly. You can always get into a store for the first time and introduce the cigar. And the way I've always done business is I don't overpromise, but I also don't like to get into a store where I don't have a way of supporting them. You know what I mean? And that says a lot for the companies. You know, everybody wants to sell. Yeah, 100%. But the retailer, at the end of the day, you can walk into a cigar shop and they're either selling cigars or they have cigars for sale. And the stores that I like to target are the ones that are selling those cigars, that they have a staff or the owner's very involved into his selection and knows his customer base and knows right off the bat if he smokes a cigar and it just pops into his, one of his customers, oh, this guy's going to love this. You know, that's somebody that's selling cigars, and that's the kind of store that I want to get into.
Preach it, Gabe. Pete, preach it, man. Every retailer should be like that.
Yep.
I'm glad you're seeking out those types of retailers because
– yeah.
That's something, I mean, I still go into shops, you know, being a retailer myself, I go into shops all the time. And that's probably one of the most frustrating things about this industry. And particularly with all the frustrations, like with the FDA and everything like that, it's the lackadaisical approach. And it's the shops that, you know, don't really have that relationship with their customers. And they're just there pushing a product. You could put any kind of widget there and they would put in the same effort. It's not even about the tobacco. It's not about the relationships. It's not about the people. They're just selling because it's a job, like you said.
Yeah, or it's a hobby, or they're retired, and this is what they want to do instead of being home. I mean, and more power to them. I mean, I understand. But at the end of the day, it's a business. And a store needs a new cigar like it needs a hole in the head. And I'm quoting Eric Espinosa on that, because when I opened my store, he was one of the first people walking through the door, and he's like, you know, stores need cigars, like new cigars, like they need a hole in their head. And it's true, you know. You have a customer base. They're used to smoking their things. You keep that humidor stocked and those things that those customers like. Every now and then, they're going to ask, hey, you have anything new? And as the retailer, if you don't push them to whatever is new, we can only do so much as the manufacturers. But if the staff or the owner of the store doesn't go in there and hand, you know, select a cigar and give it to their customer, that cigar is going to sit on the shelf. So it doesn't do anything for me to sell it to you once if it's just going to sit there, and then, oh, it's my fault because I didn't advertise, or I didn't do this, or I didn't do that, or I didn't do an event. Yeah, but what about all the time that I'm not here? You know, who else is going to push it for me? It's a double-edged sword.
And there's a story with this brand. So it's not like, hey, I'm there's someone who's come in, hey, I had a Maduro, a Connecticut, a Habano made. There's a real story, and there's a track record with this company. I mean, so the cigars that are coming out of that factory, I mean, the Cellar Reserve is Gurkha's top line.
Yeah.
The Tarano cigars, you did Sam, I believe they did Sam's white cigar down there. So, I mean.
The black.
Oh, it was the black. I'm sorry. Yes, you're right. Yeah. It was the black. They did the black then. I forgot about it. The white came out of Nicaragua. Yeah.
Yeah, we did the black out of that factory. And
that was the
great
fire-cured
cigar.
One. Yeah, that was the fire-cured.
Was that their first dabble in the fire-cured tobacco, Gabe?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's the first time the factory had used it.
That's phenomenal. That just goes to show you right there. That's awesome.
Yeah. And that was a you know, back in 2013, that kind of, you know, that's when the whole fire cured surge started, and Sam was like, that was the first one to hit the market.
Yeah, it was then the KFC and then the American Puro after that. Were the next two big ones.
Yep. No, exactly. Exactly. So, I mean, I think it's important that, you know, obviously that you want to have an educated sales force and educated retailers to do that. So I think that's right on target with that.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, Gabe, not to go backwards or anything, but there was something that I kind of wanted to ask you in particular. Like, okay, so you've in the last few years, you've done some amazing things. You know, you've gone from the retail side and like you said, you learned a lot with Coutts and you really brought that company up. And then you make this move over to MyaSilva. And you did some great things of getting that into the US market. And then you make this most recent move. Part of me is curious. I mean, with your track record for success and what you've been able to do with some of these small boutique brands, I mean, some of these bigger guys gotta be knocking down your door. What's kept you with wanting to stay small and push these boutique markets so much?
The family approach to things. I'm a big family guy, as you guys see on my social medias. I'm all about family. And one thing that really hit me when I talked to Lewis, and don't get me wrong, I knew I was going to leave MyaSilva. And a mutual friend of Lewis's and mine put us in touch. When I was already looking for something new, I didn't make it public knowledge. Because out of respect for the company I work for, obviously. But Jack Taranio put Lewis and I in touch. And Jack's a great friend of both of ours. And when I sat down with Lewis the first time, and he'll tell the story, it's hilarious. As much as he was interviewing me, I was interviewing him. Because I was about to have a baby, or my wife was about to have a baby. And if I was going to make a jump somewhere, I wanted to be sure that I can give that family time that I needed to, especially with a newborn in the house. And this job takes a lot of traveling. So I had a couple of options: to become a territory rep or to keep going down the path I am in upper management in a cigar company. Although I did great things with other companies, I'm still a newbie in this industry, believe it or not. I started my store in 2011, we're in 17. November will make it 6 years that I've been in this industry. Considerably, I'm still a newbie to be up in this upper management level. And I'm very honored that Lewis felt the confidence in me to bring me on board to do this and to take this task and build this company. But the one thing that truly gravitated me to push this through and to launch Casa Cuevas is that, as much as I am a family man, Lewis is probably more of a family man than me. This man cuts trips in half because his kid's running a track event, or his daughter was running a track event or had a soccer game or something. And when I saw that, or canceled a meeting that we had because he had to go to this event, when I saw that, I knew that this was the person I wanted to work with. So that was what it helped me make my decision. It finalized me making my decision, was having the ability to be there for my kids, because this man does it the same way, and he wasn't going to have me do any less than what he does. Him and I work, you know, par. Him as the owner of the company, making sure that things are available for me to do, to launch the brand and to get it into the people's stores and gung ho go. He does things. He'll cut a trip from the DR to be back with his family, or he'll push a trip. He canceled twice. He had to cancel trips to the DR because his kids had events. And I have a lot of respect for that, because in this industry, when you're in a bigger company and stuff like that, it becomes corporate. You no longer have that personal relationship with your boss anymore. It's you got to deliver, and it's understandable. It's corporate. We're talking huge numbers with the bigger companies. And if the rep or the territory manager or whatever it is isn't out there hustling because he's got a family event, stores suffer, events suffer, things like that happen. So by being able to give my family the time that they need, and he does the same thing, it's what made my decision for me.
You know, as the older but not wiser of the three here, you know, my kids are older. I know both Gabriel, you have two small girls. Bear, you have a small son. I'm going to give you guys the advice. Yes, listen to what Gabriel just follow that advice, Gabriel and Bear, because, you know, this is a very good time. And if you have an opportunity to be in a position, a job like that, I did not have that. I came from the corporate area. I didn't have that. Certainly do that. That is a no-brainer.
That was the main reason I had opened my store, was because I was on the corporate side of things. And when I got laid off because of the real estate crash and everything else, construction took a dump here in South Florida. I had the opportunity to open up a store with my ex-partner. And I looked at it as, well, I'm going to suffer for about a year or two financially. But I'll be there. You know, I can be there. I had a one-year-old baby at that time. And to me, that was more important.
I totally don't blame you. I want to kind of ask a follow-up to what Bear just. So there's another unique part of your trail here, in that you've actually, in each of your three management roles, you've been tasked with basically introducing a brand into the American market. So, I mean, pretty much from the ground up, like Coots.
Mm-hmm.
Even though you were a little more on the operations end of things too, then you had the same thing with Maya Silva. And now, obviously, doing Casa Cuevas. And I think with your previous two jobs, you left those companies in much better shape than when they started. I mean, you think you could actually...
Thank you, Coop.
I think that's debatable, Coop, at all. No, not at all.
I don't think it's debatable at all either. I mean, you put those brands on the map. And what's happened after that, I'm not going to comment. But, you know, that's something that is... Did you ever think, though, maybe, hey, why don't I go look at a, you know... Did you ever think maybe, hey, instead of starting something from the ground up again, go into an established boutique, right? You know, it's kind of like I was talking to someone about Kevin Durant in basketball, and they were criticizing him for going to the Golden State Warriors, right? Instead of going and taking on a rebuilding project with another team. But hey, you know, there's an attraction about going to the best team. I mean, did you ever get the bug? Maybe, hey, I want to go and take something that's established and go to the next level? Or is this kind of where you feel your niche is right now, building brands?
I've honestly fallen into these opportunities, honestly. And they've come at the right times in my life for me to make that decision to jump to them. But although the cigar industry looks huge, it's a very, very, very tiny industry. And if I'm looking for something and there's nothing else available out there at the time because all the positions are filled, there's nowhere for me to go. Honestly, it's not like I can start just calling everybody, hey, you have something, you could do it. But all these positions are taken unless you know that there's a vacancy or there's going to be a vacancy, or somebody approaches you and say, listen, I want to do this, or I want to make a change in my company. That's the way this works. I mean, if anything in the cigar industry, you guys have seen, it's recycled people. Nobody really leaves this industry.
No.
Yeah.
You know, they'll go, look, shit, Jack Taranio with the Taranio family. When they sold to General, they didn't have a place for him at the time. He went and worked with Roberto Duran. He did great things with Roberto Duran. But then all of a sudden, General was in need of a brand ambassador. Jack just happened to be at the right place at the right time, or he pursued it at the right time. And it fell into place for him. Family history in the tobacco industry for me to say, hey, you got a hole for me? I'm just another guy in this industry. You know, and retailers, and you look at retailers, you see it. The employees, you could have a rock star employee take off. He's going to be a rock star employee at another store. It happens. And in the manufacturing side, it's the same thing. Sales reps, they'll leave one company, they'll go to another. Management in the big corporate, they hire from within. They'll make a sales rep a district manager, and then from there he became a sales manager or something like that. Or somebody that jumps from another company. It just happens that when I was looking to go somewhere, there weren't that many places to go or places that I wanted to work at.
That make, yeah, and that totally makes sense too. I mean, like I said, it's kind of, it's also in a way kind of unique how that timing all worked out as well.
100%.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. And, you know, I've seen some of the things you, like, I kind of seen you learn along the way. I mean, I looked at when you were at Maya Silva, and part of really bringing a cigar into the U.S. market, you needed, you recognized right off the bat, hey, I need to have a Toro. I need to have a Toro size because, you know, that's the size. It's a U.S. size, and you had the insight to kind of go ahead and put that size into the market. Then it was a box press, the same thing. Right. So, I mean, I've seen you kind of grow and look at this, look at things from a market and say, how can I better sell my product?
Yeah, you gotta look at what the market needs, and whoever it is that you're working for, if it's an industry like ours, what does the market need? And you got to look at your portfolio. You got to analyze it. You got to say, okay, these are my top sellers. Sometimes you got to decrease your size of portfolio because things aren't selling. And it's just a waste of money for the company to make a size that 10% of the market is carrying, you know, or there's certain sizes that sell incredibly well in certain parts of this country. And there's certain sizes that don't. But if a company in our market or in our industry doesn't have your three key sizes, Robusto, Toro, and Gordo, which is your 6x60, you're missing something. You got to give it to them because those are the best selling sizes in this country. You go different regions, yeah, they'll sell a Lancero here and there, or they'll sell a Torpedo here and there, they'll sell a Corona or a Double Corona or even a Churchill. But your three main sizes are Robusto, Toro, and Gordo nationwide.
Oh, and that's what you went to. That's what you're going to market with the Casa Cuevas and each of the three buns.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's 100% right about that too, about sizes being specific. Because I mean, you know, we're a fairly educated retailer at Michael's Tobacco, and we have actually a really well learned customer base. We have a customer base that really does like the Lancero. That really does like the Corona. We sell a lot of those sizes of cigars, but we understand. That is a rarity in this business. You know, mm-hmm. Gabe just absolutely hit it on the head. You have to have a Toro. That's my general manager's favorite size. He'll smoke a Toro in any blend. That's his go-to. He doesn't reach for a Robusto. He doesn't reach for a 60. He doesn't reach for anything else. He reaches for a Toro. He is the epitome of the American smoker today because that is the size for it. But kind of to go along that line, Gabe, in terms of expanding, now you kind of talked about the Lancero and Petite Lancero that you guys have worked on and everything. Do you envision Cuevas being able to do that kind of be a little sneaky about that with their particular sizes with these blends? You know, get established, build that foundation with your core, and then hopefully introduce a size that's, you know, could be a better cigar to some of these retailers.
Well, if the FDA has their way, then no, there's. We got to go through that whole process of approval. We are releasing a fourth size before the end of the year, probably soon after the IPCPR. And that's going to be what we call the Clásico Prensado. It's a size that Lewis had imported as well prior to that FDA date, the August 8th date. And it's a 6x48 box press cigar. And it's going to be in all three blends.
That's gonna be really unique. 6x48 box press.
Yeah, in these three. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's great. That's gonna be really good with the Habano for sure.
Yep.
I'm excited to try it in the Maduro. I've smoked it already, and it's a hell of a cigar. And that's why we played with the Lanceros and the Petit Lanceros. But that's a personal thing. Those are the sizes that we love. You know.
Right.
And we did those for our own personal consumption, and that's it. But that 6x48 is exciting because it gives us another size that we can release. And it's going to fit another market, that box press market. You got a lot of guys that'll just smoke a box press cigar and they'll gravitate towards it.
Yeah. And it's kind of like, it's a short, I kind of think that's in like a short Churchill range. I mean,
yeah,
which I think is becoming that's actually becoming a favorite size of mine. That 6x48, 6.5x48. So I've seen a lot of companies do that, and it for me, I really like a Churchill, but sometimes it runs out of gas in that last inch and a half, and I find when it's a little shorter, I get that whole nice 48 ring gauge off that, which I like.
Right.
With those longer, slender smokes too, you get a real nice cool smoke about it too. I'm a big fan of the Churchill as well. It just you don't see it very often, particularly with a lot of boutiques and other companies. But I like that cool smoke that comes off that longer, slender smoke at first. And then, the cigar just naturally heats up because of, physics and everything.
Combustion and everything else. And you get more out of it, too.
I agree. Now, you mentioned IPCPR. Now, I don't know if I heard this correct. Are you guys not going to be at the IPCPR this year?
We will be there physically.
Okay.
We don't have a booth, though.
Okay.
I'll
see you in Vegas, right?
Yeah, we'll be in Vegas. Okay. We'll be in Vegas. We get there Monday night and we leave on Thursday.
That's because you guys are a manufacturer. You could be correct. There, right? So you're going to be there in that type of capacity, so to speak?
Yeah, we're going to be there as a manufacturer. And we have some meetings that we're going to do outside of the show and stuff like that with our brokers are setting up. So we have to talk to some people. But look, we decided as a small company just starting out. IPCPR is a huge expense. A huge expense. If we're going to do it right, we're going to do it right. And we're talking about upwards of 50 grand.
Sure.
To be there correctly. We don't want to get lost in that 10x10 booth or 10x20 booth, or we don't want to be stuck next to a bathroom somewhere by the food court. It's something Lewis and I talked about extensively. We asked people what they thought, and we asked retailers what they thought, and other manufacturers what they thought, and they're like, "Oh, you gotta be there." And I'm like, "Yeah, we'll be there, but do we do a booth?" And Lewis is the type to say, "Well, if I'm gonna be there, I'm gonna be there. I'm not gonna half-ass it or anything like that. I want to have a booth, and if we're gonna do this, we're gonna do it right." And we sat down and started doing numbers, and we talked to a booth manufacturer and everything else. And when all said and done, in between union fees and everything else and transport fees and the booth fee and everything that came to be for that, we're talking about 50 G's easily.
Sure.
So what we decided to do is we're going to get that money and visit nationwide the retailers and actually have some time face-to-face with these guys, with their consumers, and introduce the cigar in that fashion.
Well, that kind of takes on my next question, though. Since you guys aren't going to have an official presence with a booth or anything at IPCPR, I guess let me shift my question to a timetable of 30 days post IPCPR. You're at 25 plus counts right now. Realistically, where do you want to be, or where do you see yourself 30 days after the show?
The show isn't going to be a factor for us in that sense. I mean, we might get a couple of accounts out of it from meetings that we have set up. But honestly, if we're in about 40 accounts by that time, it would be great. My goal is within the year to be at 100 accounts. That's sustainable growth. That's controllable growth. That's inventory control. That's no back order issues, all those things. And for a small company to go into the issues of back orders, things like that, and leave the shelf space empty, you as a retailer know better that, when a customer falls in love with a cigar, they want it there. And if they don't get it, what are they going to do? They're going to go to something else. They're going to go back to smoke before. And then it's a crapshoot whether that cigar, when it lands again, if it's going to be successful again.
Absolutely. Yeah, 100%.
We don't want to have those issues. So that's why I'm trying to control the growth to be as controllable as possible.
I applaud that move as well. Because I've seen some companies grow too fast. Or I've seen some companies where they are so dependent on the face of the company that when that face of the company can't be everywhere anymore, the brand, and I've seen brands suffer for that.
Yeah. I want my reps out there doing events. I want my reps to do tastings and stuff like that. But we want to be there as well.
Yeah.
And Lewis and I are two, and it's going to get to the point where he's going to go one way and I'm going to go another to work one territory or to do an event somewhere. And at the moment, we're going to be traveling together most of the time, and they'll get both of us there. They'll get the brand owner and the director of sales there to answer any questions that they have regarding the brand and to really get to know what Casa Cuevas is.
Oh, that's going to be a huge benefit for you guys in the long run to have that kind of representation. I mean, not only does it give, not only does it put a really nice face for the company and everything, but it'll also really ring true with a lot of customers. Like, hey, they really care about this brand, and you know, they brought in the whole pack to get it going and everything. So that's fantastic.
And we care about them, you know, we care about the consumers, we care about our retailers, and that's the type of relationships we want to have.
I agree. Bear, did you have anything else along these lines?
Well, just kind of to touch a little bit more on the future of Casa Cuevas a little bit here, Gabe, the question, in addition to how many accounts you kind of saw at year's end, you kind of took that question for me too as well. I really like that you guys are taking a concerted effort and everything. Are you at all worried about that kind of that growth getting a little bit too far ahead of you? Are you guys gonna pull back the reins, so to speak, if you kind of get to that growth where it's kind of getting a little too much out of hand? Or
the benefit that we have as the manufacturer of our brand is that we can dedicate as big as a team we need to roll our cigars. So that growth, if we see that it's increasing rapidly, we can bump up production as quickly as we need it. So we don't go into those issues of the back orders and things like that. So that's a benefit. It's a benefit that not too many boutique companies have, is having their own factory.
What about the other cigar companies that you guys do production for? How did they feel? How excited were they about being associated with this new brand for the guys who've been making their cigars all along? Did you get a lot of support from them?
We have, honestly, we have the sales team for those companies, the ownership. You know, they've extended their hands, and anything that they could help, they've offered it to us. You know, whatever you need, you know, if I can help you in any way, they've extended their hands, and we're very appreciative of it.
How about, I know you're focused on the U.S. market,
yeah,
but is Luis looking possibly at Europe and other markets?
Yeah, we are looking at it. We are. We're debating right now whether to go to InterTobacco this year. But we want to have already relationships in place with distributors over there.
That's what before,
before we go there blindly. We want to have meetings set up and things like that. If we're going to venture into that expense, because it's not cheap to get out there, we want to be able to have those meetings set in place. So yeah, definitely, we're looking for growth. I mean, we have the factory, you know, the sky's the limit for us, honestly.
Do you have a lot of relationships already in Europe, Gabe, or will you be depending on the network of your salespeople to kind of help facilitate that move if you guys decide that it's good for y'all?
Well, in Europe, it's Europe is a completely different animal. The rest of the world is a completely different animal than what the United States is. You know, here in the United States, we handle our own distribution. We have our distribution office set up here in Miami. We have our own salespeople, whether they're brokers or they're in-house. In Europe, it's different. Each country has their own distributor, and that distributor has their own sales reps. So it's definitely going to go into play where those relationships with those distributors are going to, you know, control how we grow outside of the U.S.
And from what I understand about InterTobacco, and I'm learning more about InterTobacco. I haven't been there, but that's very much a distributor-run trade show from what
I
understand.
Yeah, yeah. The distributors set up the booths, and then the manufacturers show up and support their distributors.
Yeah, which is a lot of times here.
Yeah, a lot of times the manufacturers actually have to jump, or they have to have multiple people out there to represent, you know, the different distributors for the different countries.
Yeah, that was definitely my understanding of that as well, which, like I said, it was kind of a – I haven't been there. I'm not going this year. I'm looking at 2018 possibly going. but IPCPR is still keeping me pretty busy right now, which is, I guess, a good thing, so to speak.
No, yeah, you're growing faster than a bad weed, dude.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been an interesting year with Cigar Coop. So I've been very, very fortunate. Things have fallen into place this year. So it's all good.
I'm proud of you, man. You're doing good things. You're doing them right. You're getting your name out there. Everybody knows who you are.
I've been very lucky. And I got guys like Bear and Aaron who have been.
You've put your time into this.
Thanks.
You put your time. You're truly passionate about it. And it's not a business for you.
No, I mean
that's the way I look at it.
It's a business, but it's not. It's interesting because I've had it this year with splitting Cigar Coop off. I had to pay much more attention to certain business things that now were under my control, and I actually had to bring in some folks to help me with that. But the good news is we're launched, and we're able to do these shows. I got guys like Bear and Aaron, and we just wanted to do something a little different here. So. Knock on wood. Hopefully, my goal is like FDA. We're going forward, so there's gonna be this brand no matter what.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, you've always been. Excellent. Yeah, and I appreciate the support from like I said that first day we met in Chattanooga, which I can't believe it's gonna be 4 years in August. It just seems like it was yesterday, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah. And then I remember that first interview we did, and Seth was on with us that night, and.
Yeah,
you're just telling us about we really had an eye opener with Coots that night in terms of some of the things you guys were doing there. So that was great. Now, personally speaking, Gabriel, you know, I kind of always like to ask a little bit of questions personal. I see you're a boating guy. You're into boating,
yeah.
Which I didn't realize until maybe the last few months. What's your passion around boating?
Fishing.
Fishing.
But yeah,
you're into
I
the boats
fishing.
Themselves. You do stuff with the boats themselves, or is it just strictly fishing?
Well, I'm rebuilding a boat.
That's what I saw, yeah.
And that's been a project that's been going on. My wife laughs. And every time I get going on it, something happens in my life that I have to stop, you know. And it's a passion. It's a headache. But the day that it's done, you know, it's going to be probably the happiest day of my life, other than having my kids and everything else. But it's a labor of love, honestly. And it's at the point right now that I really can't do much to it because it's going to take a lot of money. And my wife's building up her business. So we're focusing on that first. And then we'll have time to play after. But
She's had her hands full, I can imagine.
Yeah, the baby.
I mean, a newborn, I mean, that doesn't take any time off your hands at all.
No, not at all. Not at all.
I can't tell you how much free time I've had since my son was born. I mean, it's just been crazy. I'm so bored all the time.
Right?
Yeah.
Right. And the sleep. We get so much sleep. It's incredible.
It's incredible. I've never been this well rested in my life. It's fantastic.
Mm-hmm. See, now, I can only do what I do because my youngest is going to be 17 in October, so.
Yeah, rub it in, Coop. Thank you. Appreciate it.
There's a whole other set of problems that get introduced.
Oh, yeah.
And see, I have one girl, and she was the oldest, and she's married now. So that was a great day, don't get me wrong, but So I wouldn't trade it for the world there. So, I mean, yeah, your family, Gabriel, beautiful family. I know Grace for many years as well. I mean, I follow you guys on social media. You and Grace are like the first couple of the cigar business still.
No, yeah. Man, please. No.
Does Grace like Casa Cuevas cigars?
She does.
What's her favorite one?
I want to say it's the Habano. She likes the spice behind it.
Yeah, nice.
She likes the spice, but she doesn't get to smoke nearly as often as she used to.
No, I can imagine that.
If she smokes one cigar a month, it's too many.
Yep.
I have to say a little hello to Grace here, Gabe, because I from one of my customers, Roger Burke, actually, he was the biggest fan. We were all fans, but he was just obsessed over the Hecha Sierra. And he said when I told him that I was interviewing you tonight, and he was like, oh my gosh. You have to tell him. I was like, it's not going to do any good. He's like, just for me. I said, okay, well, I have to tell you that if she comes back into the industry and she starts making Hecha Sierra cigars, you know, you've got a guy who'll order them by the crate over here in Texas. So if she wants to make that move, just let her know she's got a huge fan over here, in all of us, but him in particular. So he'd be.
I think she might be listening. So
yeah, I saw her in the chat room, but well, myself and my former co-host Paul Asadorian were big fans of the Hecha Sierras as well.
Oh, that was a phenomenal cigar.
But my guy Roger, man,
it was awesome, man. He loved that stick. He loved it.
Yeah, she did a wonderful job with that brand in a short time. And
yes, again, absolutely.
Absolutely. Should be very proud of that. Yeah.
We are. Yeah. Very proud of her.
Absolutely. She did a hell of a job. Wonderful person. Barry, you have anything else?
Well, I was just kind of to go back on the subject of the boat. I feel like I keep taking the conversation back a little bit. But I was just kind of wondering, are you kind of like Gibbs from NCIS? Are you building it in the basement of your house there, and you know, chiseling at one piece of wood at a time?
There's no basements here, but it's in my backyard, and it's there, and little by little, you know, it'll get done, and you guys will see it. I put every little step on my Instagram, so
right.
Eventually, it'll get done. Hopefully, next year at some point.
Fantastic, man. Look forward to that day for you.
Yeah, thank you.
That would be a great launch. Yeah. I see a Casa Cuevas party on that boat.
Oh my God! If I could fit 5 people on it, that would be a great party. It's a little 21 footer, man. It's not that big.
Definitely have to send a bottle of champagne to Chris and that bad boy once that gets launched.
Yeah, yeah. Now we're talking.
Of course, I am a part-time retailer, so it may not be the best bottle of champagne. You have to understand.
It'll be Prosecco.
Yeah. Hey, that stuff is good. My wife drinks it, so it's fine.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Awesome. So what we're gonna do is, we're going to take it into our next segment right now. Will Cooper, Bad to Pussy, we're joined by Gabriel Alvarez here of Casa Cuevas Cigars. And I think Bear and I, we've kind of set this up right now with Special Edition where we cover a couple of things, you know. Bear, you came up with this topic tonight. So I'm going to let you I'm going to put you on the spot, but let you introduce it.
Yeah, so we kind of talked a little bit about this, and it's interesting having Gabe here with us tonight too. And I don't think that Cuevas is on the end of this at all, actually. But it'll be interesting to get someone who is introducing something new, whether it's brand spanking new or just new to the market in general. And then that's the subject of hype. You know, I mean, we've been in this industry for a while. And we've all seen it, guys. We've seen the cigars that kind of just get hyped to unbelief, and then when they actually hit the marketplace, they have a tendency to just kind of fall flat or whatever. And then there's some that actually soar to expectation. And two of the examples that I give, and they're two fine cigars, and one of them went one direction, and I feel one took a while to finally build. And it'll be interesting to get Gabe's perspective on this, and I want to get yours on it too, Coop. So we had a few years ago when Jericho Hill released for Crowned Heads at IPCPR. In fact, it was on your blog, Coop. For you, along with other people, were just touting this cigar as it was a big wide release, and it was supposed to be the hit of the show.
I had it as one of the five that.
And I don't think it did. Yeah, I don't think it disappointed. It actually did. It came into the marketplace. We were really excited about it. I was really, because of my second example I'm going to give, which actually preceded the Jericho Hill, I was trying not to get excited about it because I did not want to fall into that rut with getting into the hype and then it just fall on my face or anything like that. But it really delivered. It was fantastic. It was well balanced. It was great. It was unique. All the box press sizes. The flavor was there. It was fantastic for the market at that time, with a medium to full bodied cigar, with full flavor, that just hit the marketplace at the right time, and it hit in stride for that company as well. So bravo to them on that. But on the other end, the example that I give was the Drew Estate Undercrown. The Drew Estate Undercrown to me didn't necessarily, like, everyone was so excited. I mean, everyone and their mom still to this day loves the Liga Privada number 9. I mean, it's one of the most highly sought after cigars in the world, and it's all about it. And so the Undercrown was supposed to capitalize on the Liga 9 market. And for me personally, it took me, and I gave it its due, because I smoked through a box of those cigars to finally get myself to say that I actually liked it. Because it, I got through the first two, I didn't like it. I got through third, I liked it a little more. Fourth, fifth, I mean, it was a slow and painful, albeit enjoyable, painful process to get to like that cigar. And it's had some sustained success since then, but I think I'm not unique to that position. I've got that vibe from a lot of different consumers and a lot of different retailers, frankly, that it kind of did the same thing. It took a while to build. Now it's a staple, you know, in Drew Estate's portfolio and on retailer shelves everywhere. But it definitely did not hit the hype. You know, it did not match the hype. And so, guys, I'll turn it over to you a little bit. I kind of want to get your opinion on you know, cigars you thought did the same thing, and what can make or break a cigar with hype.
You know, I want to just comment. Can I comment first on the Undercrown one?
Sure, go for it.
I think part of the problem with Undercrown was that at the time, Liga Privada was still a cigar that everyone thought they can get. And it wasn't ever I don't think it was ever designed to be like that. So it was – Undercrown had to come in and compete with two very, very epic cigars, the T52 and the number 9. And it wasn't that it was a bad cigar.
No, it wasn't.
But it had to compete with that. And Drew Estate kind of had to – you know, they had to work to kind of segment Liga Privada's place in the market, which I think took a while. So as they grew, they had to control the growth of Liga Privada, but they were able to control the growth and build Undercrown a lot more. And I think what hit Undercrown is when they came out with Corona Viva. That's when I felt that was the cigar that kind of put them over the top with that, where it was really good. But I saw there was a little bit of a delay with that piece. As far as Jericho Hill goes, John Huber, the guy's a marketing genius. So he has been really, really, you know, for the most part, everything he puts out there has turned to gold, because he does a very good – without print advertising, he's been able to build momentum through a grassroots effort.
What's interesting about the Undercrown, too, is I think that as a model, the Shade actually had, you know, about 10 times the success that the Undercrown did when it was released. I mean, it was something that was really highly sought after and got going very quickly, whereas the Undercrown had a little bit of a delay, like we were talking about, which was interesting. But it had the Undercrown's already hard work success to build on. And so it wasn't as hyped, but there was a lot of hype behind it, and then it actually had some pretty decent success too. So,
and they had to change the marketing a bit on that there, because Undercrown was kind of positioned as this Liga Privada derivative, where, hey, you know, we're working with these different primings, but we're working with the tobaccos in the Liga Privada family, and that's how Undercrown, the San Andreas one, was sold. Now, Shade is a different animal. That was a blend constructed by Willie Herrera.
Right.
I asked Jonathan about that, and he said point blank, we had to change the messaging of what Undercrown – we had to move away from that model of Undercrown being this in the Liga Privada family and kind of make it stand on its own. So it's kind of like a spinoff, so to speak, now as a brand. And Undercrown is really – I think it's like a workhorse brand now of Drew Estate, and they have that Connecticut market. And they were able to tap into those Connecticut smokers, which they didn't really have anything for a while in that area.
So Gabe, I'd be interested to get your thoughts on, like, what you think makes or breaks a cigar with hype or not.
Well, without mentioning any names, it's when a cigar gets hype, it's usually a big company behind it, and it's their next release, and people are waiting for the next best thing from that company. And if that doesn't deliver or under delivers, that's where that hype falls flat. And that hype, I see it when I had my store. It was usually with advertising and things like that, because social media and it was just getting started back then in 2011, 2012. I want to say that what's really done a lot for the industry in a positive and in a negative way for cigar brands has been all the social media groups like on Facebook and things like that, where people are connecting all over the nation, and now they have personal recommendations and people not actually going out to try a stick because of what somebody else wrote about it. And that'll kill hype on a cigar immediately, because people start reading bad reviews or the point systems on the reviews and stuff like that, and then somebody all of a sudden gets an 88 on a cigar in a magazine or an online thread or whatever it is. They're like, oh, 88, that's not a good rating. It's still a great rating when you think about it. I mean, 88s, 89s, 86s, 87s, in a scale of 100, that's still a hell of a rating on a cigar.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I've never seen a cigar get 100, you know, on a reputable publication or something like that. So that goes to say that the average ratings for cigars are high 80s to very low 90s.
Right.
We just got an 88 on Cigar Snob on our Connecticut. It happened to be that that's the way they felt or their panel felt about the cigar, but somebody else smokes it and in their book it's a 99 or a 95. But people are, I see it as, you know, the social media and online way of things nowadays, it's double-edged sword for any type of brand, whether it's cigar related or not. And it'll kill hype or build hype incredibly fast and throughout the world, because people are so connected nowadays that it's no longer print publications only. And in our industry, we can't advertise on radio or TV and billboards or anything like that, like it used to be. So those hypes are now being created by the consumers directly almost.
You know, it's an interesting point that he brings up about the system, and you know how an 87, you know, or an 88 rather, is actually a very good rating. Because I mean, if you actually look at the table in like Cigar Aficionado, for an example, you know, they have like 95 to 100 is perfect. That's what they call a perfect cigar. 95 to 100 is perfect. And then 90 to a 95 is, you know, amazing or incredible. Still a great compliment. And then 80 to 90 is still, you know, a superior cigar. I mean, it still has an immaculate description to it. You know, and I've never seen a cigar in Cigar Aficionado get below an 80. I don't think I've ever seen one get one below an 83 for that matter. But they actually still tell you what a 70 to an 80 is, and like they even say that, you know, zero to something is unsmokable. They have it labeled as that, and so, but no one really pays attention to that. They just see that, okay, there's cigars that are above it at, you know, 95, 94, 92, 90. 88 is kind of the middle of the so-called pack in the grouping that they have, and so they think it's like it's an average cigar, and that's not necessarily the case. It's a tremendous cigar, but for that particular person or that particular panel, well, it was, you know, it just happened to fall in with that scoring. So I think that's a very interesting point that Gabe brought up.
Yeah, I think, you know, it has become, you know, it's kind of because we equate it to, you know, obviously we equate it to grades or whatever. You know, what I use, I have the two scoring systems. I have the numerical, which is a merit score, and then I have the old Stogie Geeks rating, which I still use, which is a buying score. And, you know, a fiver is, like, right in the middle of that buying scale. And we're telling people, buy five of those cigars. That's not a bad rating. That's saying, hey, we're still telling you to invest and put five of those in your humidor. You know, that's a testament is what we look at. But not every score, you know, not every cigar could be a 95. You know, Steve Saka said it, you know, if you like every cigar, you're not going to love any cigar.
No, and, definitely.
Yeah. So you have to kind of draw a line there. You know, you talked to Gabriel, you talked a lot about, I know we're getting a little bit into scoring, but I tend to be pretty patient with getting a review out. I'm not the one to kind of, I'm never the first one. If it happens, it's rare. Because I kind of go, there's processes that I follow. I mean, and everything goes in my, that this one humidor that I have for review. So it's always the same conditions, and it's always in there for, you know, a minimum of 2 to 3 weeks. And that's just kind of to put it on an equal playing field, so to speak. So it's not an exact science, but, you know, I kind of said to someone, if you review a cigar like off the truck and you give it an 85 and you give it or you give it a 95, you're really not doing it justice because, I mean, I don't know how it is, but you get broadleaf cigars in North Carolina this time of the year. It just sucks the moisture up. So I can't review them. They just don't smoke. I have to get them under optimum temperature and humidity. So I usually, and because again, the worst thing I could do is say, hey, this cigar don't draw. I think that's the worst thing you could say to a cigar or in a cigar review. And that's something you don't want to see. And look, all these factories, you know, the factories, I've been to enough of them. They're all doing good process. Like you said it, Gabriel, factories, they're still doing all quality control things. They may be doing best practices differently, but they're still committed to that quality in the end. Which is why, you know, hey, you know what? That's why we don't get a lot of 60. These aren't the type of factories we're dealing with. These are factories committed to building quality products.
Well, right now is the best time in this industry for the smoker. There's so many damn good cigars out there. Every company that's coming out with a cigar, they're trying to just better themselves other than bettering somebody else. It's just, what are we going to come out with next? And now... again, to the FDA issue, we all have our hands tied. We're all handcuffed at the moment. You know, it's no longer, and we've seen it at our factory, being that we were dedicated strictly to private label for so long. We haven't seen a new customer this year. We are our own new customer this year, but it's no longer that guy that has a brilliant idea or has an idea in his head of what blend they're going to make or an expansion of a line or anything like that, or what's next for them in the horizon. It's gone. Gone. That's this side of the business is frozen.
We like to say that too. Then again, there's a lot of information still trickling out. There's still gonna be a lot of products shown at the IPCPR. I just worry that someone, and I don't have any companies in my head, but I'm concerned that certain companies aren't following the rules.
Well, when you see it on social media and you see all these like small companies and stuff like that try to come out with new blends or factory changes and stuff like that, and they're going to come out with something new. How?
Yep.
How? I mean, we retained an attorney immediately. And our attorney is Frank Herrera and more versed in this law than the man that's filing suit against the FDA directly. It doesn't exist in this industry, you know, and how smaller companies are trying to come out with new things that weren't there last year. It's beyond me, because why? It's you're looking for trouble.
Sure.
You know, and I'm definitely not going to mention any names, but they're out there.
They're
you
out there.
See it on social media, and you see, what the hell is he doing? Or you know, what are they doing? It's you wonder, you know, how could they do this? And we're trying to play everything by the book. I mean, we're not releasing anything new that we haven't released ever. I mean, we have another line that we're releasing next year, but that's a grandfathered line. That's something that we're not going to release till we have that predicate certificate or the approval from the FDA in our hands. You know, and it's a family line that the family came out with, you know, in that predicate date time. It was in the market in that predicate date time. But things that they're asking for to be able to approve this predicate date or the product as a predicate product, they're asking us for invoices from retailers, the invoices that we issued to retailers back in that date frame. Who in corporate America holds things that long? The only reason we would hold them was for the IRS. Yep. And the IRS's rule is 7 years. We're past that with the dates that they're asking for with the predicate.
And that's why I think it's going to be really interesting if the lawsuit happens. And I've kind of...
No, the lawsuit's happening. What's going to happen at the end of the day is the difference.
Yeah.
You know, I'm still wondering... Which way is it going to go?
Yeah, I still wonder if it's going to get settled out of court, and that's where.
You know, because as a company, we're doing everything by the book. Our product registrations are in with the attorneys already. We had to submit pictures of every single type of packaging that we did. Bundles, boxes, quantities. You know, we haven't sat down to put blend information yet because we're not there at the time frame that the dates are scheduled right. to do it. But once that happens and it's on paper, the FDA doesn't understand that crops change. You have to tweak a blend. Year in, year out, any company does this. Every single company does this. They don't make the same exact cigar year in, year out. They have
the FDA doesn't understand everything.
Yeah. Anything. I don't think they understand anything.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and in our industry, it's like the wine industry. Wines aren't the same year after. That's why they have dates on bottles. They have year, you know, the year of production on the bottle. Because the following year, they had to change something. The grapes weren't there. They had to bring it in from somewhere else. God knows. But it's the same thing. We have to, you know, we had a bad crop one year of one certain tobacco that we use in our blends. Now we got to go get it from a different supplier. Or one of our suppliers doesn't have it. We have to get it from a different supplier. It came from a different farm. What's going to happen?
Nope, that's a fair point.
It demonstrates their ignorance was fully demonstrated when they launched, you know, when they announced and released the FDA deeming regulations, and they lumped us with the vaping industry. That just clearly demonstrated their ignorance as far as they have no, absolutely zero understanding of premium cigars and tobacco in general. They have absolutely no idea what they're talking about, and it's sad. It really is. They've handcuffed brilliant men like and families like the Cuevas family. They've absolutely handcuffed you guys, and it's just awful.
I'm gonna steer this back to the hype discussion a little, because I want to get my stuff in. But so I had Bear. I have two as well. One that I think was hyped and it kind of took off, and then one that I think is in that slower phase right now, and I'm not ready to kind of say it's success or fail yet. So I go back to the Camacho relaunch of 2013, when Davidoff revamped, completely kind of changed the Camacho portfolio in terms of looks. They changed some of the blends. They streamlined the portfolio. They came up with the bold standard. And, you know, anytime you rebrand something, it's a risk. And, you know, Camacho was an iconic line for many, many years. When Davidoff got it, I think Davidoff needed to figure out what they wanted to do with it. I don't think they knew what they wanted to do with it right away. So I think they took a couple of years. And then they do this relaunch, and Camacho was back. I mean, it was back, and that's, you know, it's a successful. They put some heavy marketing behind it. They have some good blends. Some of the blends I've noticed with Camacho, if the blend hasn't moved, they've eliminated it very quickly, you know, and they kind of worked with the stuff that's been working right now. So, you know, I know when they relaunched the Diploma, that one really didn't take off. They kind of eliminated Diploma from the portfolio, but obviously they built it around the Corojo, the Criollo, the Camacho Ecuador then came out. So I think from that standpoint, Camacho, big win. You know, it's always a big risk doing what they did. That could have not worked very easy, but especially when you make the packaging as different as it was. The other one is, you know, there was a lot of hype 2 years ago around Padron Damaso, the Connecticut. I think that one's been a slower process to kind of penetrate the – I actually talked to George Padron on this topic, so I don't want to put – hopefully I'm capturing this accurately. And I think he even felt it was going to be a longer – that he wasn't going to just dump this Connecticut into the market and everyone was going to go to it. You know, it was something very different what they were doing. And that's I think, been a slower process right now. And they're competing with a lot of other high-end cigars that are Connecticut's, a.k.a. Davidoff. So I think the jury's still out on that one right now. I don't know. I think we'll know in the next couple of years of how successful that's going to be.
Right. Well, it's just completely different than what everything else that they did.
Yeah.
I mean, what they were known for, what they're famous for and everything. And when I even said it, I mean, when I saw that, I was like, okay, something. Okay. Kind of like, if it's, you know, if it's not broke, why fix it? You know, one of those things. I mean, I understand taking on the challenge. I mean, you know, like I said, I can applaud, and I'm all about risk. And, you know, I think that it's phenomenal when a company can do it. You know, there's risks all around this business. You know, we talked about, you know, Gabe's moves in the industry earlier in this broadcast and everything. You know, there's risk with anything you do in this business. And for Padron to actually completely just go, you know, 90-degree different direction of what they've been doing and what they've been successful at, turning out number one rankings like it's their job, and just dump a Connecticut on the market. I'm glad that they, again, I hope, like you said, you're hoping not putting words in his mouth, but I'm glad he had a realistic expectation for it. Because, yeah, I think it has been a slow going for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. It, you know, but at the same time, you can't blame them. They didn't, there was a part of the market that they didn't have.
Oh, absolutely.
So, you know, they came out, you know, and they came out with, you know, they came out with a couple of new offshoots of it last year. I could, you know, we've talked a lot about aging, and I can also say, I think if you age some of those Damascos, smoke them with some age on it, you see big differences with that cigar too. So, you know, and Padron doesn't have a sales force either, so they kind of are doing this on Padron's reputation. So, you know, they don't have someone in the store saying, hey, this is what the cigar is all about. Here's the story. They've kind of had to do it how they've always done it with their other lines, which makes it more tough. You know, I think they've hit some challenges with that.
Yeah, and just to comment on your thing about Padron, I think I completely agree with you there, Coop. I think that was a huge risk for them to kind of rebrand a very – you know, very iconic brand that was in existence. You know, when they took over ownership of it, there were a lot of questions what Davidoff was going to do with this brand, because it was kind of an edgier brand to begin with already. And then they took it up and ran with that, even with their rebranding of it, and really turned it into a complete, you know, a complete polar opposite of what they do and what they're completely successful at. So, you know, on one hand, we're talking about Padron doing that and it being slow, and then we're praising Davidoff, saying, well, they, you know, they hit the nail on the head with this one. But I think they also don't have Davidoff's name on Camacho either. So I think that kind of helped as well.
No, yeah, you know, what's surprising though, what surprised me about that one was there was this lull with Camacho for about 3 years, where Camacho was just, there was nothing new coming out of Camacho. It really was. It was starting to have a reduced footprint in the stores. I've seen a lot of stuff on closeout. So you know, there was, you know, come, you know, other brands were starting to get a footprint in the market. You know, and then even Christian by that point had already launched CLE. So you know, they were a little behind. But they, what they did is they went to their strengths. They went to the Corojo leaf, which was really the whole, a big strength of Camacho, and they built the brand around the Corojo, is what they did. So I think it's it's probably the most, at that level, I haven't seen a relaunch as successful in the cigar. I can't think of another one. I'm talking about at that scale. You know, that's probably the one I look at that was, you could say whether you like the cigar or not, that's an argument we could make, but people are buying them. Come on, yeah. I've been to enough of the Davidoff dinners and stuff at IPC. You know, that's one of their, that's a performing brand. They know, if it wasn't performing, they, you know, like Xeno wasn't something performing for Davidoff, and that's why it's kind of fallen off.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Any other thoughts?
Not on this particular subject, Coop, but I know that there was a couple things that you wanted to talk about here at the end of the broadcast. But I would like to mention on a personal note, this past weekend was really hard was really very hard in the Michael's Tobacco arena. We lost one of our most popular and most popular consumers, one of our customers. He was family. He was more than friend. He was a family, and he was known as Super Dave, Dave Larson. Very suddenly, on Friday evening, had a stroke, and he was hanging out with one of his friends from our shop as well, actually at another cigar shop location, and it was very sudden, came out of nowhere. And this was a guy who, you know, was always on the golf course, was always on a bike, you know, riding trails, you know, up until just a few months ago, definitely epitomized a very healthy living. I mean, only a very young 61 years old, and very suddenly had a stroke, and by Saturday, you know, by Saturday morning, he was gone. They, you know, he was officially taken off the ventilator on Sunday, and it was a very hard weekend for the Michael's Tobacco community. He'll definitely be missed. So Dave, wherever you are, and I hope you're listening, I just want to bid you adieu, and I hope that God's got a golf course paved with gold for you to play on. So we wish you well. I hope you rest in peace, my friend.
No, Bear, you know, I've been, you know, when we have a local shop, and, you know, Gabriel's a shop owner, you know, you meet people in the shop. You spend a lot of time, you're in the shop day to day. And you build friendships, but there's something about the friendships in the confines of that cigar lounge that it kind of takes on another dimension. And we had a one of our local guys, this is in 2008, a former Marine. You know, he was a former Marine from the Korean War, an elderly man. He passed away, and I know that feeling. I've been down, you know, so it's a loss, because you feel it becomes, it moves from friendship into that family realm almost.
Definitely. Most definitely.
And it hits you harder, you know, that maybe I didn't communicate with this guy much outside the cigar lounge, but there's something, it's when you're in a lounge, you share things, you know, you share things and your problems, or just look for encouragement and stuff. So I've been down that road. I know that's a hard thing for, you know, our thoughts and prayers are with his family and friends right now. For sure.
Thank you.
Yeah. And on another note, there was, not to be the bearer of bad news, but I think a lot of folks found out this week, Bob Marino, he's a industry veteran in the cigar business. Bob passed away last week, a week ago today. For folks who didn't know Bob, he had a successful career at Coca-Cola in management, and then he moved over into the cigar industry. Yeah, he first started off at Zycar, based in Kansas City, where he was from. Bob did very well in the marketing end of things. Yeah, he moved over to EP Carrillo. He became, I believe he was their first national sales manager. He then moved over to La Palina as well. I think he was a big part of the growth of La Palina. He was there. And then he moved into Davidoff. He was working on the DuPont Alliance with them. And I believe Bob's position was eliminated at Davidoff late last year. And so Bob was working outside the industry right now. But I have some thoughts on Bob, because the funny story is, Bob originally thought I was a writer for Half Wheel when he first met me. So that's kind of how it started out. And he came into my shop in Charlotte. And Bob was a road warrior. Bob wasn't a guy who sat behind a desk and counted numbers. He's like Gabriel, you know, in that national side. He was out with his customers. And so, yeah, that was kind of how we started. But Bob was a guy, he helped. I could pick the phone up and call Bob and say, hey, Bob, what's the deal with this? Or what's happening with this? And he always got back to me. He was always responsive, honest, and forthright. And we also had another bond in that we both grew up in Staten Island, New York. So all I know is that Bob got sick very quickly. and he passed away. Like a lot of people were so that surprised a lot of people as well. So I got word of it right before I was going on the radio in Atlanta on Saturday, but I didn't quite have all the details. And then, you know, you obviously don't want to say someone's dead if they're not dead either. So, but yeah, it was very, very unfortunate. So I think it was a big loss. You know, again, did I pick the phone up and call Bob every day to chat? No, but when Bob was in town or Bob would, you know, we'd get together for a smoke, things like that. So again, kind of that you build that family in the cigar industry. So, again, thoughts and prayers with Bob and Bob's friends and family at this time as well.
Absolutely.
Yep. So,
any brighter subjects?
We got to finish on a positive note, Bear. I'm putting it up, Bear. Well, hold on. The news out of Iowa is something interesting.
Yeah, the news out of Iowa. So we talked earlier about we had talked earlier on a another show. Specifically about some legislation that's being currently introduced in the Texas legislature by Representative Matt Shaheen, House Bill 1279, that would essentially eliminate all future regulations, restrictions, or laws that could be put forth that would prevent a cigar shop from existing. So premium cigar shops that sell more than 51% or more of their revenue is streamed from cigars. They would forever be free from any restrictions. So they were basically sanctioned as, you know, sanctuaries for the cigar smoker. And it's a brilliant and very simple piece of legislation that's being proposed right now in the House in Texas. And with that, what's really interesting in Iowa is, and I'm trying to get the name of the actual bill here in just a second, it was actually passed either yesterday or this morning. And it was actually passed with zero nay votes. Now, it was kind of hidden in a law that had to do with like a minimum wage and some other some regulations and stuff and laws and everything like that. But basically, and it's Bill HF 295 in Iowa. So basically, there will be no grandfathered restrictions allowed on any tobacco, including premium cigars. Going forward, so like for example, like if a county wanted to introduce a new tax on premium cigars, they couldn't do it. You know, minimum age increases will not happen in Iowa. So everything is now, you know, if it's still 18 there in Iowa, or in the if any of cities or counties or municipalities have increased it to 21 now, they can no longer change it. So. No other city can go up to 21. No other counties can go up to 21, and no other restrictions can be put in place. So, and it passed with, again, zero nay votes. So obviously, even if this was hidden in some kind of other piece of legislation that had to do with other stuff that had a lot more, I guess, more positives than I guess if they wanted to consider this a negative for guys who might have, you know, for politicians who might have been on the fence about this issue. It obviously wasn't enough. It wasn't enough to dissuade them from voting yay in this scenario. So this was actually, in my opinion, so far, what I've been able to do some research on is a huge win for our industry, and it can be done. Yeah, it can be done in Texas. So I hope that House Bill 1279 gets pushed through, and I hope that other states as well kind of follow suit. That you know, with our industry, that you know, we can have our little slice of heaven. It's certainly possible. And it's certainly doable, and it's not going to do any harm to anybody else. And it will be a huge win for us if we can get House Bill 1279 pushed through, and then any other states who follow suit to do the same thing. You know, we retailers need to stay in existence, man, because without retailers, Gabe's there looking for another job, and, you know, Coop's looking for another job, and, you know, it all starts, you know,
people
it all starts stuff from the ground up.
Can't do what we're doing here.
Exactly. Absolutely.
So let me ask a question. What's the advantage of doing it? What would be an advantage? Why put in a legislation like, I mean, I'm thinking for a second. All right. They're not looking after the tobacco industry.
No. And again, I don't think the Iowa law that was passed was actually even, that wasn't even on the forefront. House Bill 1279, very, very much so. Again, it's a very simple piece of legislation that, Representative Shaheen is proposing, and it has completely and 100% to do with the premium tobacco industry and the premium cigar industry. So it's not hidden or anything like that. And this piece of legislation for Iowa, it's a very cornered part of the bill. And again, there's a lot of other working parts inside of it. And I think that's why it was able to pass through. Whereas 1279, I think there will be a lot of pushback on it because it is very specific. They're not hiding it. They're putting it at the forefront. Like, hey, we want cigar shops to exist and we don't want anyone to mess with that. So it'll be a challenge, but yeah, it would be great. It'll be a challenge. But maybe we can follow, you know, maybe the state of Texas can follow suit with that and kind of piggyback onto some other piece of legislation and hide it, so to speak, so that we can keep something like this, going. Cause it's a very, very wonderful, wonderful law, obviously. And it's a wonderful, simple law that would just really help out small business in general and keep a lot of people working.
Agreed. So that is some good news. The big fear sometimes with those when it's wrapped up, and we're going to talk to Glenn Loop on this. I'll talk about that in a second. But sometimes when these things are wrapped up with other things, though, that, not to be the negative guy, but sometimes that's the stuff that gets negotiated out. Now, does this have to go to a Senate vote in Iowa?
No, it's done. It's passed in the law.
So the governor signed it into law?
Yes, the governor signed it.
So this is it. So the only way they could change it is with another piece of legislation.
Correct.
Which is, as we learned, it's very hard to undo a piece of legislation.
Yeah. According to my resource, it was signed into law either late last night or this morning, and the governor has signed it.
Oh, that's great. That's great news. Awesome. That's great news. Maybe other states, like I said, follow suit. And I kind of just mentioned this as well. So we have a special edition scheduled for June 27th. We may have another one in between. But June 27th, we have Glenn Loop on. It's going to be a full Cigar Rights special edition. And Bear and I are really going to, it's going to be a really, you know, this is going to be one you're going to want to hear. I mean, we've heard Glenn on a lot of shows, but I think we have some interesting topics, so to speak, where we're going to really kind of, you know, from an industry perspective, really get into this. So I think if you're, you know, you've probably heard a lot of this stuff before, but, you know, we're going to try to really give a perspective and get Glenn's perspectives on that as well. So you'll definitely want to tune in for that on June 27th. And, you know, there may be some things happen, you know, the way things are, who knows what's going to happen between now and then. Every time I haven't interviewed Glenn in about 15 months. So I haven't interviewed him since the regulations went into effect, because when we had him on Stogie Geeks, I was in Cuba that week. So I didn't get a chance to interview him. So look forward to that. This Thursday, we have a gentleman by the name of Brian Moussard from a company called Cattle Baron Cigars. I've interviewed this gentleman before. He's a great interview. His cigars are really good. He's also part of the cattle industry, this guy. So we'll be talking a lot about steak that night. And he also makes vodka, so you'll want to tune in for that.
Just sounds awful. Steak, vodka,
yeah.
Cigars. My goodness.
Cigars.
Good Lord.
And then the following week on Primetime. Actually, that was Primetime for Thursday. We're going to have Brian Moussard. For Primetime on the 22nd, we're going to have Claudio Sarai of Mombacho, the master blender for them and president of the company. So a lot to look forward to over the next few weeks as we get into IPCPR. So want to thank Gabriel very, very much.
Yes, thank you, Gabriel.
Thank you, guys.
Yep. With that, we will wrap up special edition number 3. Thanks to everybody for tuning in, and we'll see everyone on Thursday night on the Primetime Show. Take care.
See you next time, everybody.